Techonomics on KGO 810. Humans have only one planet. So how's that working out so far? On this week's Techonomics, host Jason Middleton speaks with a NASA astrobiologist about his new book, Earth in Human Hands. Humans have survived near catastrophic climate change in the past. Are we up for the task again? Will we be able to repair any environmental vandalism humans have caused to Earth's environment? And what are the real opportunities for humankind when it comes to moving off planet? Maybe Mars. In addition to this intellectual tour of the solar system, we also try to answer the age-old question about the future. Is it more like Star Trek, or is it more like Mad Max? Mars, child scientists, carbon reduction, and science fiction. All that and a little more is coming up on this week's edition of Techonomics, starting now on KGO 810.
You must be raving mad. We're on the air. Look, what's the idea? Come back here.
Hello and welcome to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. We have a special show this week, a show dedicated to a discussion about the fate of the planet. Hey, like Tom Petty once laid it down, it's wake-up time.
We are not just a civilization having some problems, but we're a unique moment in the evolution of the planet. And what we're facing is really hard. We're the first geological process that's sort of woken up and become aware of itself. And we're kind of waking up and seeing ourselves doing all these dangerous things to the planet.
No doubt the fate of the planet in the face of climate change and potential ice ages is a big topic, fraught with near-term anxiety and long-term worry. So we dialed up an astrobiologist whose new book, Earth in Human Hands, offers more hope than you might think is available.
If you look at the history of our species, you also see that we've faced existential crisis before, and we've gotten through some really tough times by reinventing ourselves.
We have three segments to our interview with Dr. David Grinspoon. We will start with a stage setter, where humans fit in on the geologic scale when it comes to planet Earth. Then we will dig into how other planets could offer salvation, or at least clues as to how we can create a more sustainable and even multi-planet existence for humans. And then we'll dive into a little science fiction. Is the film Interstellar as good as people thought? Or is Arrival a truer-to-science science fiction story? First, let's survive the recent ice age.
I'm David Grinspoon. I'm an astrobiologist at the Planetary Science Institute. And I'm the author of the new book, Earth in Human Hands.
We're going to circle back on that very cool title you have, astrobiologist. But I'm wondering, and thank you for coming into the studio. Let's start at the beginning with authors. I like to know the ideation process. Not necessarily when you put fingers to keyboard, but when you started thinking, hey, this has got to be a book. When did that happen?
You know, I've always been into space ever since I was a little kid. It informs my worldview. You know, I saw Apollo astronauts land on the moon when I was 9, and it changed my life and set me on this direction of being a space scientist. So I've always been about studying other planets and helping build spacecraft to go study Mars, Venus, and figure out the stories of the planets. And really about 10 years ago, I was hearing everybody talking about climate change and freaking out about climate change and all. I realized that because of my interplanetary perspective, that I do have a somewhat different way of looking at humans on Earth and our presence here as part of planetary history. I decided that it would be worth trying to share that perspective because I think it might be helpful in helping us sort of deal with our current moment where we're all very freaked out about the future to step back and take that interplanetary deep time view of our own existence here. So right. That thought was really what led me to want to write this book.
It seems like one thread of that thought would have been like, as you say, the universal context that you have that you're sharing in the pages seems that there is a bit of a message of hope. That even though we might be a tiny blip on the timeline, if you will, of the universe, you seem to pull out some things that, hey, this isn't as bad as you might think if you look at it in perspective. What are some of the takeaways that you came away with, you know, that were hopeful?
I think I do have a somewhat more hopeful view that is born of this deep time view. And there are a few reasons for that. One is that I think it actually evokes sympathy for humanity to see ourselves in this planetary evolution context because you realize that what we're faced with is actually, in a certain sense, more difficult than what we think. We are not just a civilization having some problems, but we're a unique moment in the evolution of the planet. And what we're facing is really hard. We're the first geological process that's sort of woken up and become aware of itself. And we're kind of waking up and seeing ourselves doing all these dangerous things to the planet, and it's freaking us out, and it ought to freak us out. And yet, if you look at the history of our species, you also see that we've faced existential crisis before, and we've gotten through some really tough times by reinventing ourselves and sort of reconceptualizing ourselves and seeing ourselves in a larger sphere and learning to act in a larger sphere. And that's exactly what our challenge is right now. So I think the deep time view of our species shows that what we're faced with now is actually a kind of a challenge that we have faced before. So that's part of it. And another part of it is that if you actually look at some long-term trends about what's happening on the planet, there is a lot to be hopeful for. And I say this without minimizing the challenges. We've got some serious challenges. The 21st century, I think, is going to be kind of rough. Uh-huh. But I also think it's very important to think about the 22nd and the 23rd century and where we're going. And I think there's some very good reasons to believe that our visions of those centuries can be legitimately more positive, and there's reasons to sort of be excited about the future where we're going. And I think those visions can actually help us get through these very serious challenges that we're facing on the near term.
Before we go to the 22nd and 23rd, because I want to, because a lot of it is in the book, let's go back to the existential crises that you mentioned there. One that pops to mind that may be recent would be Neanderthals. Is that an example? Because that didn't end so great for them, but is that an example of a crisis that humans or humanoids have had to go through?
Yeah. And I go back even a little deeper in time. Well, there's a number of cases, and it's interesting. A lot of them have to do with climate change. People don't know this, but humans have a long history with climate change, and a lot of our major evolutionary leaps have come in result of crises that had to do with climate change. And one that I talk about is a genetic bottleneck that happened 190,000 years ago, where we see evidence that our species was almost completely wiped out, maybe down to 1,000 people.
Whoa.
Like almost down to nobody. There was an ice age in Africa, and we couldn't be hunter-gatherers because the game died out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a small band of humans surviving, and they had to find a completely new way to live and survive. And they did it by inventing language and culture and new technologies that required new communication skills to pass on those technologies. And basically, they learned to make really sophisticated metal spears and do shell fishing and live off of the ocean. That, some scientists think, was the origin of modern humans. So crisis because of climate change and then learning to enlarge our sphere of communication and cooperation, that's what forged us into modern humans. And that kind of reinvention, I think, is very much the challenge that we're faced with again.
So that survival instinct is literally baked into our DNA, and it's proven through history.
Yeah, and we are, in a very real sense, climate change survival machines.
Oh, well, let's hope you're right, because like you said, 21st century might be a little bit rough. We're speaking with Dr. David Grinspoon, actually. He's the author of the new book, Earth in Human Hands, Shaping Our Planet's Future. You mentioned the 21st century might be a little rocky. We kind of went through that, economically speaking, coming out of the industrial age and into the 20th century. We had, obviously, the world wars. This might be something similar, I imagine. I think a lot of people are predicting something of an upheaval of that magnitude, maybe for decades and decades. We survive that. We get into the 22nd and 23rd centuries. What's your outlook for that as an astrobiologist?
Well, like you say, I think there are reasons to believe we're in this, obviously, going into this upheaval period. And the 21st century may be rough, and it will be. And I like the way you compare it to the 20th century because, so people are so filled of doom and gloom and apocalypse imagery right now. Mm-hmm. But really, I think the bad scenario is that the 21st century might be as bad as the 20th century if we really don't do this the right way.
Right.
And when I say that, people say, what are you talking about? The 20th century was great. And I say, well, it was great for you, but what about the hundreds of millions of people who died in wars and famines?
Right.
I think that's the scale of tragedy we're facing now if we really don't make the right choices in the 21st century. But nonetheless, picture the 22nd and 23rd century. We will be off of fossil fuels. I mean, there's no way around that.
Mm-hmm.
They're
going to run out.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get there. And we can do it the easy way or we can do it the hard way. And I'm very much pushing for the easy way. But no matter what, even if we make the stupidest choices possible, we will be off of fossil fuels in a century. So we'll have a new global energy system that's not inherently wrecking the natural systems that we depend upon. And population will be stabilized. All the projections show population peaking later this century and then starting to come down. So we'll have a stabilized population. We'll have a, smarter, less destructive energy system that's powering our civilization. And then, you know, a lot of the long-term indicators are very, very positive, even though we're in this blip of craziness right now. You look at, you know, infant mortality has been cut in half in the last 30 years, and poverty is definitely on the decline globally. Right. And that's leading to this decline in fertility because women have more choices in places. So sort of fertility is declining for the right reasons, and population is going to level out. So I think there's every reason to believe that by the 22nd century, you know, damage will have been done by what we're doing to our climate now. But I also think it's quite likely that at that point we'll be drawing carbon down out of the atmosphere. There are technologies. We know how to do that. It's just expensive. We'll get better at it. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll be looking back at our time now and going, how could we ever have behaved that way? You know, driving around in these vehicles that were wrecking our climate. What idiots.
Right.
And there will be damage that has been done, and we'll be in the process of repairing that damage, and we'll become more comfortable with this new role on the planet where we are actually acting globally in smart ways and not only fixing some of the damage we've done, but preparing to be better stewards and protect the planet from some long-term threats, which without us would threaten life in the future. Stopping those asteroids that would otherwise cause the next mass extinction, preventing that next ice age, which in 50,000 years would cause another mass extinction. Mm-hmm. And basically, in the long run, there'll be this sort of big payback where not only will we be fixing the damage we're doing now, but I think in the long run, we'll save more species and become a more benign influence on the planet and maybe even ultimately be sort of the best thing that ever happened.
That was part one of our chat with Dr. David Grinspoon. He's an astrobiologist and the author of a new book titled Earth in Human Hands, Shaping Our Planet's Future. For a link to this and all of our segments, please check out kgoradio.com/techonomics or search Techonomics wherever you score your podcasts. Audio Boom and iTunes are our main platforms. Coming up after the break, part two of our look at the future of the planet. This is Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please come on back as we try to help save the planet. Next.